show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport and a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's official as of today. Baseball season is officially done. So there is no legitimate actual baseball being played to discuss, Royals or no, for the next few months. But we'll still got plenty of things to talk about. Before we get to that, of course, quick congratulations to the Houston Astros for winning Game 7 last night in very unspectacular fashion.
I mean, right.
Just in the fact that the game was not very exciting, especially relative to the previous six games, which were bonkers. But congratulations to them. And our old pal, Kevin Goldstein.
Yes.
Who has been on the show multiple times. He was on the 1510 show at least once. He was on the back when we were still Roman Report. He was on that a few times. We were we kind of had a joint thing with him and some other. We had our little blogger panel, and then they had a kind of a scouting panel that they were in that he was a part of with Jason Parks.
Who also won a World Series last year.
Yes, both of whom have been on the show multiple times. So mm-hmm. Congratulations to both of them. But for Kevin this year, for the complete and utter turnaround that the Astros did in losing 106 games it was in 2012, and now they won 101 games this year, and they are World Series champions. So congratulations to them.
Yep.
So with that, we'll kick off the show, of course. Introductions as always. I am Jeff Herr, and with me is the People's World Series champion, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing this evening? Very fall evening
here. Yeah, it's finally fall, and it only took the end of the World Series to get there. I'm pretty good. I should also do a little shout-out to Carlos Beltran, who gets his ring.
Correct.
Finally, after so many years, finally gets a World Series ring. Pretty cool to see that. It was a pretty good World Series. It was that last game was very.
It was a fun, very fun World Series.
Yeah, the last game was very calm and normal relative to the rest of the games, like you said. But
still,
7-game series is always entertaining. So, baseball. I think the right two teams, the two best teams from each league. We're representing
The two most consistent teams all year.
Yeah,
The ones that ended up in it.
They were strong. It's just they both kind of wore themselves out pitching wise, and the Astros had a little bit more, and it worked out. So entertaining, I think, good for the game. You can never really complain too much about a 7-game series. If they've had 3 out of the last 4 years, there have been 7-game World Series matchups.
That's true.
The exception, perhaps, of course, 2015. The Royals didn't need 7.
Didn't need 7 to take care of business. Perhaps my favorite tidbit, talking 3 out of the last 4 years, we have – it's kind of interesting that 3 out of the last 4 years there has been a team who has broken a 29-year exactly World Series drought. And each of those 3 out of the last 4 years, the team that has broken that drought lost. So you had the Royals in 2014. Last time was 85, and they lost to the Giants, of course, in Game 7. The next year when the Royals won, they beat the Mets, who the last time they had gone was in 1986, 29 years before. And then, of course, last year there wasn't one. But then this year the Dodgers, who last time they had gone was 1988, 29 years, and now they lost in 7 games. So kind of a fun little fact to know and tell.
So what teams?
We'll call it
the curse.
We'll call it the 29-year curse. Yeah.
Okay. So which teams did you look at? Which teams have a 29-year curse going into next year?
That's a good.
Are
question.
There any?
I was trying to think.
Well, let's see.
There's can only be two possibilities, right? So
yeah,
what would it be 1989.
89 would be the Giants and the A's. Well,
Giants, was that the one? Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So the A's. I think the A's count.
The A's?
Right?
Is that the A's last World Series?
No, it's not their last one, but they were in that World Series. They were in the World Series in 1990, but they lost. Hated
them.
I mean, 1989, and I hated the A's from that time period.
Of course,
jerks.
Let's see.
That's, I mean, the other, they played the Giants in 89, so the Giants obviously have made the World Series more recently.
Yes,
also jerks.
Obviously, also big time jerks.
Yeah.
Let's see. Now I'm on this big. I'm gonna be like, okay, I'm trying to think in my head.
1990 was the Reds. I don't think they've been a World Series since. So in a couple of years, the Reds will be there. They won't win.
Man, we almost had, because the Tigers made it in 2012, and they had been since 1984. That's 28 years. Damn. So
close. Tigers. But, messing everything up.
Oh, no, wait. They made it in 06, so there's a drought there. I forgot about that. So never mind. But who was 90? You said the Reds and who?
Reds and the A's was in 1990.
So I don't think either of them are making it in 2019. So who knows who the next 29-year drought breaker will be. But perhaps we'll never be in another 29-year drought breaking period like we are. The peak has come and gone. But rather interesting. So good World Series. Congrats to the Dodgers and the Astros on a fantastic season from both sides, and the Astros for taking the World Series. And the kind of, I don't know if you say sabermetric crown, or I don't know what you would say, but they're both the Cubs and the Astros the last couple of years have been very, you know, stat heavy teams. Theo Epstein, of course, has used that method to much success in Boston. So take that for what it's worth. The battle will rage on, stats and no stats, et cetera, et cetera. We don't need to go into that quite yet. We've got a whole off season. We can tackle that topic.
Right.
So, but first we'll talk about the off season itself, which is finally here. I don't know if you say finally. It's not like we were waiting for it. Everyone loves more baseball, but whether we wanted it or not, it's here. And we've talked ad nauseum about the Royals free agent situation, but we'll talk about it some more because now it's real and now things are going to start happening. So let's start with. Let's go with a breakdown of kind of the important dates. I know you were kind of compiling all this information, so why don't you give everyone the breakdown of the important dates as we move forward now that the season is officially over and the league year will be over, you know, when that'll happen, when the qualifying offers will come down, everything. Break that down for us so we can all know what to expect in the coming weeks here.
Okay. Well, the most important stuff, you know, there's really a bunch of different phases where especially now, you know, we talked about a lot about the qualifying offer last week. The teams have 5 days to make those qualifying offers to their pending free agents. And really everybody by the CBA, they're free agents today. So Eric Hosmer right now as we record this is technically a free agent. But the Royals do have an exclusive negotiation window for the next 5 days with he and all the other free agents. And then after 5 days, they're all set free. If players are offered the qualifying offer, sounds a little redundant, but that's it's what it is. Yes. They have 10 days to accept or decline it, and then it proceeds from the details that we explained last week. Depending on where they sign and for how much, there is draft pick compensation. The expectation that we have, and I think most everybody has, is that the Royals will offer the qualifying offer to Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, and Lorenzo Cain. the remaining free agents will become, well, fully open free agents. They can negotiate with any team. They can sign with whatever team will have them. They may not do so right away, but that's kind of the first phase. There's also in this period the kind of settling of you know, options, team options, mutual options. So we'll probably see Mike Minor kind of make that decision. I think the Royals would exercise their side of it. He will probably decline his side of the mutual option, collect his $1.25 million buyout, and go be a free agent. So, you know, that's probably something else to expect. The other things that come up in the offseason, there's arbitration. The teams have to decide which of their arbitration-eligible players will get contracts extended to them. Royals have technically five arbitration-eligible players, though one of those is Jorge Soler, who, if he opts into arbitration, Major League Trade MLB TradeRumors.com projects a $1.1 million salary for him. Otherwise, his contract that he signed originally with the Cubs gets him paid $4 million. So he's not gonna opt into arbitration.
That would not be smart.
That would not be a good idea for him. But Kelvin Herrera is in his last year of team control, so he's got one more year of arbitration. Brandon Maurer, acquired last year, is eligible for arbitration, his second to last year. Mike Morin, who the Royals picked up late last season, is eligible for the first time. And Nate Karns, who was acquired last winter, is also eligible for arbitration for the first time, coming off of a number of injuries last year. I would expect the Royals will decide to tender probably all of those, but I could see Maurer and Morin maybe being non-tendered, which means they would then no longer be on the 40-man roster, so they would be available for anybody else to go grab. The next kind of phase of the offseason is decisions to add players to the 40-man roster who would be eligible for the Rule 5 draft. And just for timeline-wise, arbitration, I haven't seen an actual date for when some of those deadlines start popping up, but it's usually about a month or so after the World Series when you need to tender arbitration to those players. If you're adding a player to the 40-man roster to protect them from the Rule 5 draft, it's usually about 2 weeks from the World Series. So just as a brief review, there's players who have been around for a number of years in a minor league system. In order to keep teams from hoarding them, they have to be added to the 40-man roster or they're eligible to be drafted in the Rule 5 draft. You know, you've seen the famous kind of story was that the Royals didn't protect Whit Merrifield a couple of seasons, and he would have been eligible for any team to pick up in the Rule 5 draft. They did not. The Royals obviously have selected players in the Rule 5 draft before, most notably Joaquin Soria, who ended up staying on the team the whole season and became one of their marquee players in some of the dark seasons. So that those are kind of like the three phases. And then after that, it's basically everybody's available to sign wherever. You'll have the winter meetings in December, which is when a lot of the activity really picks up. That's when Wade Davis was traded last winter. We saw just after the winter meetings in 2012, the Royals traded Will Myers to Tampa Bay for James Shields and Wade Davis. So the next, you know, 7 or 8 weeks are going to be pretty busy as far as a lot of those transactions. And then after that, it kind of boils down to teams trying to find players who just have been kind of hanging out there and players trying to find teams that still need them. And so that's kind of the general flow of it. It's going to be a couple of weeks here of a lot of different activity and a lot of different things happening. And there may be some trades. There may be other things happening, but more or less the things that are most pressing right now are those qualifying offers. Then you get into 40-man maneuvering and arbitration tendering and things like that. So that's kind of the main outline the Royals are going to be looking at as they start to work towards whatever this next phase of Royals baseball is. the process too, the next wave, the, you know, I don't know. It's not a full rebuild, but it's definitely a regrouping of some sort. And the next couple weeks, yeah, whatever it is, it's going to start to take shape here over the next few weeks. And yeah, well, that's the general kind of feel for a lot of those big things.
Yeah, and I think for the immediate future in terms of what how that timeline is going to unfold, I don't think we should expect many surprises. You know, in terms of qualifying offers, you know, we had one of our was it last week we talked about the qualifying offer stuff? I'm there. Okay, work has been crazy, so I'm like, this is my busy time of year, so I'm all kinds of scattered. So I was like, I couldn't remember if it was last week or the week before that we had talked about all the qualifying offer stuff. But we talked about the qualifying offer stuff, and so that's not going to be a surprise who's going to get the offers and everything. You can go back and listen to that show if you really want more in-depth thoughts on everything from those. And then as that kind of transitions into winter meetings, then things are going to start heating up. The hot stove season will be a little bit before winter meetings. And do we have a date for winter meetings yet?
There is a date. I don't have it in my notes.
Typically sometime mid-ish December.
Yeah.
So around that time, you know, typically we'll see one block, but not for the Royals necessarily, but at least one kind of blockbuster trade, you know, for baseball. It seemed it's pretty popular. Everyone's in one place. Yeah. Everyone can talk to each other, et cetera, et cetera.
It's a really fun freaking week, really.
Yeah, it actually
there's like
is.
3 days where it's just a ton of information popping out, and
yeah,
it's just a lot
for,
of fun to keep
for
up
nerds
on.
Like us, and even if it's not actual trades, you know, just information, like you said, of you know, here's what so-and-so is saying about this, about possible rule changes, about possible whatever, and then also the rumors that pop up, oh, so-and-so is talking to so-and-so about possible deals here, possible trade to make here, etc. It's definitely a fun little week. It's almost like an off-season trade deadline, if you will, where just a lot of things kind of heat up at the same time, and it's fun to just kind of be a – I don't say fly on the wall, but from a Twitter perspective, you got all these reporters who basically are flies on the wall, and they can tell the rest of us about it. So that's one of the things where winter meetings before Twitter, I don't recall what they were like, because most people probably didn't. It was like, oh, hey, it's winter meetings, and you kind of knew, and you're like, maybe there'll be a trade. But the real fun aspect of it, I don't think really came along until you had Twitter, when you had all these reporters who could just kind of spit out little tidbits of information as they go, instead of trying to maybe do one article a day if they're really were working hard, you know?
I mean, I don't really remember it from a pre-internet stage. I remember MLBTradeRumors.com was like a huge godsend for that kind of stuff, because I remember the first time I really remember following it was when Johan Santana was a free agent. And it was just like there was like every team was supposed to be in on him and everything. And so it was basically the first time to really like aggregate all those sources and news reports into one spot. And so you're just hitting refresh on just whatever's happening. And I think this is before, what, 07? I think that was the year the Royals got Gil
Sounds
Mesh.
Right.
Yes. And then there was a couple a little while later. My timeline's all wrong for those years when they were going after Jose Guillen. I remember they were also interested in Andrew Jones, and so it was like, or maybe it was Torrey Hunter. And so you're like trying to keep up on. Okay, we're just hit refresh. Is there a new report? New report? New report? New report? And it was just like chaos to just kind of keep an eye on it. Twitter definitely made it a lot easier, and you know, if you follow enough baseball reporters and national reporters and whatnot, you know, it's a steady stream of just rumors and things happening all the time. So that's a lot of fun. I looked it up. It looks like those will be held in December 9th through the 13th. So
okay.
That's what to look
forward
to.
Around
so,
that time.
5 weeks from now.
Yeah. So probably expect some sort of something to occur.
Yeah.
But outside of that, and then typically, you know, there's – it's not – you'll see some before the winter meetings. You know, you'll see some players sign certain places, but a lot of the feel like, especially in recent history, don't necessarily see a ton of free agent signings before the winter meetings.
Yeah, especially not the big names. They really want to get in there and get everybody, you know, your agent can hop in one hallway and get three different suites of guys who want to sign your client. And, you know, if that's like Scott Boras, he's going to be busy. And he can just kind of bounce around and throw those names around and see what happens. And so usually, yeah, you don't see until around then those guys start to sign and you kind of get everybody captive and things like that. So it's entertaining, but it's whenever the Royals guys decline their qualifying offers, I wouldn't expect them to go sign somewhere.
Yeah, they're
right
not going to go out and sign, exactly.
It's not going to be like 2 days later, oh, they signed somewhere. No, they're going to let things mellow out. They're going to let some of the, like, you know, the cheaper options maybe even sign somewhere who want to kind of strike early. And, you know, that makes some of the bigger teams who are really looking for someone a little more urgent, you know, a little more antsy to sign someone. Maybe they're going to go with that extra $1 million a year for your guy. So it'll be fun to see how those things develop. Even though it's going to be terrible when those guys start to sign other places. But
yes, but especially with – and there was an interesting MLB Trade Rumors article that kind of brought this point up. But especially when talking about someone like, you know, Eric Hosmer, who's kind of the marquee player of the main free agents from the Royals. But he's somewhat polarizing from a free agent standpoint, you know, just because of how his history has gone, the kind of – off-year, on-year type of pattern to his career so far, and as well as how some of the advanced metrics, specifically defensively, don't necessarily like Hosmer. But so he could be one of those free agents that really kind of polarizes people trying to – the people that are interested in him, because if you're a more sabermetrics-focused team, maybe you take a step back and you think, well, I don't know if he's really worth the kind of money that he's going to be wanting, et cetera, et cetera. So who knows how that'll play out, but it'll definitely be interesting to see. But all that's going to do is lead to the idea that, you know, Hosmer will probably sign a little bit later, at least in terms of after the winter meetings. Now, another thing that's interesting about, and you can go and check it on MLB Trade Rumors. They just have their top 50 free agents. It's kind of a thing they do every year. But they have Hosmer at number 3. Interestingly enough, they have him re-signing with the Royals for a 6-year, $132 million contract. That's a $22 million average annual value for those keeping track at home. And that would, in and of itself, that would turn the Royals' payroll next year to be pretty close to what their opening day payroll was this year.
Yeah,
which would be pretty impressive. Unfortunately, I don't know that it would leave much room for other acquisitions in the offseason, and those are things that the Royals do need to make other acquisitions.
Right.
So as much as I'd love to see Hosmer back, that's kind of a scary number. There's always tricks they can use with you know, you can backload it. Maybe his sixth year, he's making $32 million that year. And then, you know, he's only making $8 million next year, and it scales up from there. Who knows? You know, they can get creative with those things if they need to. And I don't know. You know, players have kind of shown, especially if they're given that big number overall, especially because in baseball it's guaranteed, so it doesn't really matter. You're going to get your money no matter what. So they've shown a little bit more willingness in baseball to be a little bit more amenable to moving the contract numbers around in that regard, as opposed to something like football, where things aren't guaranteed and there's so many different bonuses and real money and fake money and all this stuff. So, but that's kind of interesting to see them. MLB Trade Rumors thinks that he'll re-sign with the Royals. I mean, I don't know. We've kind of talked about it, but, you know, just brief thoughts again, you know, for, I mean, how do you really feel about that? I know we all love Hosmer. You know, he's a good player. He's a I would say he's a premier player as a first baseman. You know, position wise, he's one of the top in the league. I think a lot of the defensive metrics don't like him as a player, and I can kind of see why. I think a lot of it, you know, we've talked a little bit about this in the past, but the Royals' specific choice in positioning him, typically close to the line, I think kind of cuts down on his range artificially from a defensive standpoint, but he makes up for it in his ability to essentially be just a gigantic net at first base. I mean, there's how many times do you see a ball get past Hosmer? It does not happen that often.
You know, it really doesn't.
I think we've taken that for granted the last couple of years, to be honest. But you know, without getting too into the nitty gritty there, I mean, how do you feel about, let's say that's the case, right? MLB trade rumors, 132 million. Excuse me, 6 years, 132 million. Eric Hosmer is a Royal, basically for what will be, if not his entire career, the majority of it. How do you feel when the ink is still wet on that contract? What's your thought?
I mean, I like Hosmer a lot. That is a lot of money for a player that, well, I mean, if he can continue to be the player he was in 2017, that's a pretty good deal. And you're basically trying to get him in his peak years and paying him as if he's going to perform at his peak in those seasons.
So, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but a side question to that then. To follow that logic, the player that he was in 2017, assuming you can get that, how many years do you need to get that production out of Hosmer as a Royal to make that contract worth it?
Well, let's see. I don't have his official warp in front of me, but I would think you would want him to be a two-win player on average for each of those years, and you would probably hope that he would be 3 to 4 wins in the first few and give you some surplus so that later on, and to protect against injuries, that your value per the whole contract evens out. I think, you know, like we've said before in previous shows, previous winters, a lot of times, like the Robinson Cano contract and the Albert Pujols and et cetera, you know, some of those really big contracts, they sign the big deals, these 8, 9, 10 year deals, knowing that the 8th, 9th, and 10th years are probably going to be pretty bad. But if you can get your extra value at the front of it, it evens out. And, you know, for Hosmer, you know, I think the Royals are a team that probably don't care about the defensive metrics. I'm sure they have other measurements that that they use that indicate that he's fine and you know, matches the reputation that he gets more casually, you know, where he's nominated for a Gold Glove again this season. So, for whatever that's worth. I mean, if he can be the same guy, I think that's a contract that's worth it. The question really is, that's a 6-year deal. Are the Royals going to be competitive for most of those 6 years? And I don't know if that's the case. And if not, then it doesn't really do a whole lot of good to have him on the team for that kind of money if, you know, the Royals are going to be trying to make it to 500 each of those 6 years or 4 of the 6 years, and then maybe they contend in the last two. I mean, it's, you know, while I think that the Royals probably won't be at the Astros tanking levels, I'm not, you know, you look at the division and the White Sox have a ton of young players who are going to be pretty good and played okay at the end of the year, and the Twins came on, and the Indians are still going to be really good, and they have a lot of young players who are under team control for a while. So the next 3 or 4 years, it's kind of tough to see where the Royals fit as far as contending in the AL Central. And, you know, if that's the case, you're basically just paying Eric Hosmer for a few years to maybe in year 5 have it be relevant again as some of the A-ball and rookie ball guys filter their way up. So I don't know if it's practical for them to do it. That being said, it doesn't need to be practical for them to do it because they love Eric Hosmer in Kansas City. And really, when you look at what his market is, there's, you know, there's teams that would like him, but I don't think they're going to be liking him to that kind of 6-year, $22 million a year level. The best team that probably lines up for them is Boston, and they're said to be interested. But are they going to go that crazy when there are guys like Yonder Alonso out there who could be had, or Mike Napoli, or Mark Reynolds, or even Lucas Duda? I mean, if you can find an alternative for 2 or 3 years and maybe you have a prospect coming up the line, do you need to sign Eric Hosmer for 22 some million dollars a year? I don't know. So it might end up like, I think Sam Mellinger was theorizing this, that the market might kind of end up calming itself because some teams that you might expect would be bidding may not be there. And maybe it makes him more willing to take a deal. So then maybe it's 6 years and $110 million. I don't know, but I could definitely see the Royals doing that. I don't know that it makes sense for them to do that. I don't know. I mean, I'd be happy when he resigned, but there's also a certain point where it's like, you know, he does have a lot more expectations to meet on a deal like that. And he hasn't been consistent enough in meeting those up to this point. So I don't know if I'd be super happy by year three of it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's not apples to apples in terms of the entire situation, but in terms of feeling as a fan, it's similar to Alex Gordon. You know, it wasn't as much money for Alex Gordon, but we were happy when they re-signed him. World Series hero, yeah. Homegrown guy, legitimately coming from, you know, the quote-unquote Royals kingdom in Omaha, grown up a Royals fan, etc. So it felt really good. But at the same time, even then, we kind of recognized, I don't know, $72 million, that's a lot of money. And I think it was you that made the point today, or maybe it was Leske. I think it was you, but in the Slack chat, you know, it's not a problem to have Alex Gordon. It's a problem to be paying. Or no, it was Ian Kennedy about that. But you know, it's great to have Ian Kennedy. What's not great is paying him $70 million if he's not going to perform at the highest level. So, or not the highest level, but at the level that you need him to perform. So it kind of has that same feeling to me a little bit, where if the Royals were to make that happen and you've got Hosmer, even if it shakes out like you were just saying, that Mellinger was kind of thinking maybe it could work out too, where if it just teeters a little bit in the Royals' direction, and then, okay, $110, a little bit more reasonable than $132. Did I say $110? $110 million.
In that case, I'm sold.
If Hosmer stays for $110, I'll pay it myself.
Right. The union would have issues, but...
Yes. But whatever. Whatever. Hey, you know. But if Bobby Bonilla is still getting paid, then
right.
I can pay Hosmer out of my own pocket. But if that were the case, you know, it'd be like, oh, this is great. Hosmer's going to be a Royal for basically his whole career, and, you know, still got that World Series, and that may be what we'd have to cling to for the next few years, because it would severely hamper, I shouldn't say severely, for the entire contract, because, you know, next year they would be severely hampered, but after, you know, as is the way of things, these contracts would start falling off. Of course, the younger players, assuming especially the younger ones that started to perform better, would get more expensive through arbitration, etc. So it would kind of balance out a little bit, but it would still present some difficulties for the Royals in terms of a strict payroll standpoint of, you know, especially the next couple of years having Gordon, Hosmer, Kennedy, those players on the books at such high cost. And how are those other holes going to be filled? We all know the Royals' situation with the minor leagues right now, that it being not great. And, you know, I think if some things fall the Royals' way, which really if you look at any really good minor league system, even going back to the Royals in 2010, things kind of have to fall your way in the sense of prospects play above their heads a little bit. You know, I mean, was, you know, Chris Dwyer a top 100 prospect? You know, he was a top 100 prospect in 2010, 2011. You know, is that – I don't know that he was regarded so highly when he was originally drafted. But, you know, it was a solid player, I think. And then – you know, but you need some players like that to kind of step up a little bit, and it makes your farm system a little – so if that were to happen, you know, then things are a little bit easier to stomach. But outside of that, you know, where are those holes going to be filled? How are the Royals going to account for, you know, needing a little bit deeper rotation, needing to fill out their bullpen, needing better options in outfield after losing, you know, Lorenzo Cain? And I mean, because right now you're sitting with Gordon, Soler, and, you know, who's going to be your center fielder? You know, are you going to bring up Bubba Starling? You know, are you gonna move Gordon to center and put Soler in left and then put Bonifacio in right? I mean, that's – you're going from a world-class outfield of a few years ago to
– oh, boy.
To just, you know, hold your breath every time a ball's hit in the air.
Yeah.
So that's just – you know, it's just in a vacuum, if it's something that the Royals can afford and Eric Hosmer is someone who wants to come back and everyone wants him back, everyone loves Eric Hosmer, that sounds fantastic. It'd be great. But – these things don't happen in a vacuum. You have to take these. You have to take all that into account, and that's what makes someone like Dayton Moore's job very difficult. And so he's going to have to balance all that and say, okay, we want Eric Hosmer back. I truly do believe Hosmer would like to come back if the money is right. Mm-hmm. And the money, you know, some people I think would make. And it's nothing. It's not a knock on Hosmer. But he doesn't strike me as someone who would take a very steep hometown discount. You know, a few million or something.
Yeah,
okay.
You might save like half a million per year.
Yeah,
because he's kind.
But, yeah, but I mean, if we start talking $10+ million,
yeah,
that's not gonna happen. So there might be players out there who would do that, but Hosmer's not one of them. Again, that's not a knock on him. That's just being realistic about, you know, what I think. And he should. Go get your money.
Yeah, he's at his peak. He's had his best season in his career. There's no reason why he should be trying, you know, willing to take a discount unless he really, really wants to go somewhere, and that's the only way to make it work. So,
yeah.
That's more power to him.
So I don't know. It'll be conflicting, definitely. The Royals are definitely going to make overtures to get him back in Kansas City. They want to keep him. He's probably one of the, you know, not only from a performance standpoint, but just from a name recognition standpoint. You know, you can pretty much go, anybody who's a decent baseball fan across the country knows who Eric Hosmer is. You know,
yeah.
He's, whether it's because of the mad dash to home in 2015, just his general playoff, the way he played in the playoffs in 14 and 15, you know, all-star MVP, you know, all these different things, you know, multiple-time Gold Glove winner. I mean, if you're a baseball fan more than just kind of casually following your own team, you know who Eric Hosmer is. So I think the Royals like that. I think they kind of want that. It's been a while, I think, since the Royals have kind of had that, you know, Mike Sweeney probably being the closest, Carlos Beltran definitely was, but at the time, the Royals were in such a weird position. Everyone knew that he wasn't long for this team, so it kind of didn't feel the same. But anyway, that's beside the point.
Right. a lot less of national broadcast, a lot, you know, the internet was very much in its infancy in a lot of those years, and it's just like there's just not as much reach. And whereas now, yeah, like you're saying, Eric Hosmer's the face. I mean, it's Hosmer and Perez, and those are the two most recognizable guys on the Royals.
Yes. And
so, I mean, that counts for something.
Absolutely. And they've, you know, I think it counts for something definitely with the front office. So they would love to bring him back. We know that. But we'll see what happens. It'll definitely be conflicting if he does. And I actually want to kind of use this before we talk about some of the other things on the MLB Trade Rumors article. You kind of transition that into – I mentioned how tough of a job Dayton Moore has to try and balance all these things. But we haven't really discussed too much in depth, and there's not a ton to discuss really, but with Dayton Moore and the Braves situation and just what's going on. So since we've last recorded, it came out, or maybe it came out even before we recorded last and we just didn't discuss it, but that
I think it was the day after we recorded, actually.
Was it? Okay. Of course.
As it always happens.
It didn't happen right after we logged off. But
probably,
Excuse me. David Glass has actually restricted Dayton Moore from talking to the Braves. You know, normally it's pretty commonplace that, you know, for owners, especially GMs, you know, especially a situation like this where you've got Dayton Moore and he's got history with the Braves, you know, let him talk and just kind of feel it out. And I think there's always kind of a handshake agreement where, you know, you can go talk to the Braves, for instance, but don't sign anything. I'll let you talk to them, but don't sign anything. Don't leave without talking to me first. If it's about how much power you have in the organization, if it's about how much money you're making, if it's about this, that, or the other, come talk to me first. We can hash this out. Maybe we can make it work for you still here in Kansas City. Maybe the deal's too good, and I'll tell you to just go ahead. You know, I think that, again, I'm not privy to that deep knowledge of the front office of most organizations, but it's kind of interesting that Glass denied it, because it seems like that's – you don't see that too often. And Glass and Dayton Moore have – David Glass and Dayton Moore have such a good relationship. It seems odd that would happen. There's been some theories kind of floating around. I think Leske was the first one that brought it up to me that possibly Glass is playing the bad guy here, so that, you know, Dayton Moore, who probably, I don't know what level comparatively, I don't know if it's something that someone like Dayton Moore would compare in terms of Braves versus Royals, but I'm certain he's got a love for the Braves organization on some level.
Yeah,
so
definitely John Cherholtz, who is basically a mentor.
Yeah, so it's got to be tough to be in that situation and then say just no. So it might be right. Like, hey, David, you know, hey, Mr. Glass, I'm really, you know, I don't want to leave. I'm committed to the Royals, but this is kind of a weird situation, and can you help me out here? And so David Glass says, okay, sure, I'll play the bad guy. I'll put it out in the media that I said no, and then I'll actually say no and won't allow it, and the Braves will just kind of have to deal with it. So that's the last we've heard of the situation, if you will, with Dayton Moore and the Braves. I don't know if there's going to be anything more. Maybe that's just it, and the Braves will move on, and they'll find another GM, and that'll be that. We'll see. Again, I still kind of hold true with what we said in the past. I don't foresee it happening, but you never know. You know, things have kind of gone quiet, and sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it's a really bad thing.
Sometimes all of a sudden, boom.
Yes, exactly.
Things change.
But, you know, as you mentioned, the winter meetings, December 9th to the 13th, I would be very surprised if the Braves wanted to wait past the winter meetings, you know, to hire a new GM. You typically want to have your GM ready to go in the winter meetings so that he or she could be there.
Yeah.
And, you know, make things happen if they need to. But we'll see.
They do at least have John Hart there, who can basically fulfill that role, but it is something. You know, one thing I did see that might change the equation a little bit. Last time we were talking about this, the real technical opening is GM, but in Dayton Moore would be looking for something more along the lines of president of baseball ops. And Mark Bowman, who is the beat writer for the Braves on MLB.com and at Braves.com, basically said that, you know, if they're talking about Dayton Moore, they're not intending to make him the GM. They would offer him that president position. I don't know what that would do to John Hart, who is currently in that same position. Presumably, I guess he would step down or be fired. I don't really know. But that could be one thing that would change it. The most simple explanation is probably David Glass doesn't want to give him up and is saying no. But it could be also that Dayton is interested and maybe interested enough that Glass is saying no to maybe compel the Braves to maybe send a minor leaguer over or some international spending draft pool over to the Royals or something like that. I don't know, but I think most likely he probably just doesn't want to lose Dayton Moore, but could definitely develop into something completely different. I think in the same vein, Dayton Moore would probably like to be able to move on. You know, you don't want to go too far into the middle of the offseason because that's a pretty significant time for every team. You don't want to change gears. You don't want to be a GM who has to take over a team in the middle of winter who has already done different things, and now you have to basically pick up from where the last guy left off. So I don't know. I wonder if Dayton's going to just definitively say something one way or the other once the qualifying offers resolve themselves, and if maybe some of those guys, you know, stick around, maybe he's more likely to stick around or maybe not. I don't know. It's it just seems like to me that they would, both sides, you know, Dayton Moore, the Braves, everybody involved would really want to just have it resolved well before any of these things really start to take off, because, you know, you're just kind of, it's just awkward for everybody. Like, yes, you don't want to be saying, oh, we traded Raul Mondesi later. Like, what? No, that's really just not a great professional situation for everybody. So I don't know. We'll find out. It's going to be a thing until it's not a thing one way or another. So there's just going to be whatever the most recent report is what we can go off of. And, you know, if David Glass changes his mind and the Braves talk to Dayton Moore and they convince him to leave, then I guess that's probably going to be something we talk about all winter and through all of next season, because it's going to be a pretty significant development. But tell them we just don't know.
Yes. So just kind of thought that was a good – and a turning off point to get that out there. But to kind of compound on the difficulty of a job that Dayton Moore will have with Eric Hosmer, you know, he would still want some of the Royals' other free agents back as well. And as far as the MLB trade rumors, top 50 free agents, it's kind of interesting this year. And we were kind of talking about this before the show. It's one of those things where it feels kind of good. At the same time, it feels not very good. But the Royals have three players in the top 10 free agents, where it's like, hey, that's cool that the Royals have, you know, because typically we were talking about, you know, in years past, the Royals might have one guy in the mid 40s or something. That's just kind of like a guy, you know, no offense to Melky Cabrera. He's a nice player, but you know, that was typically kind of the high point for some of the Royals teams we've seen in the past in terms of free agents. But
it's like
now the
James
Royals have
Shields and Billy Butler after 2014 is probably as good as it ever got.
Yeah.
For a lot of those years.
Yeah. And now the Royals have Ryan Madsen's another good example. Like, you know, he was a solid free agent, but he wasn't, you know, people weren't just clamoring to sign him, even if he did sign a pretty good contract. But so the Royals have three guys in the top 10. We already talked about Hosmer, who comes in at number three. The next highest is Mike Moustakas, coming in at number six on their list. And the prediction for contract-wise is 5 years and $85 million for Mike Moustakas. And then, interestingly enough, they have him going to the Braves. So we've heard some names thrown out. You know, he's got the L.A. connection, so I think the Angels have always been kind of a thought, and they could have a use for him at third base. And then you've got, you know, obviously the Boston. Boston really could use a third baseman, but how Moose would be in a big market, who knows? So those, we've heard those names a lot, and then a couple others, but I haven't really heard a ton about the Braves being interested. I don't know if that's even really, I've definitely haven't heard anything about them being interested. Not to say that they haven't been, but I just myself haven't heard. But as far as a landing point or a landing spot, it's been minimal at best. But what are your thoughts when you hear that? So 5 years, $85 million. Do you think that sounds about right? Question one. Question two. Braves. Do you think that's a good fit for him? And do you think, you know, I mean, have I just kind of missed the boat on this Braves thing, or has it? Because I haven't really heard a ton of noise about Moose to the Braves.
No, most of the time when I hear about Moose, it's like the Angels, it's the Giants, it's maybe New York.
Just because New York gets in every conversation,
right?
Because they have basically the money to sign anybody they want. So.
Right. But I haven't really seen him linked to the Braves at any point. But the Braves are a team that, you know, they have some good young prospects coming up. They do have some of those guys starting to creep up as a sort of core group. So they may be in that position where they're starting to be ready to find those impact veterans, and Moustakas would definitely be someone there. If it's 5 years, by the time that contract's up, he's probably got a couple of seasons with a large group of young players coming up. So, I mean, I could see it. The contract's probably about right. I mean, when you consider that the qualifying offer is $17.4 million, and that's the average of the top 125 salaries for the year, you know, you're basically looking at, you know, Moustakas is getting paid for 5 years at about that average. So that seems about right for a player who may have some durability questions. You know, has been pretty good since 2015, and definitely coming off of his best year power-wise. So, I think that's about fair. I don't know about the Braves, but, you know, a lot of times teams emerge as contenders for a player as a free agent when you don't really expect them. So, you know, if they feel like they wanted to go after him and they're ready to do it, I could see it. I don't know if it really does a whole lot for them in 2018, but maybe by 2019, 2020, he's a pretty good piece of a young developing team that's starting to make some noise. So, it'd be interesting. I think that the Royals, he could come back to the Royals, but I sure don't expect it. I don't think they would go as aggressively after him. They have other options, Chesler Cuthbert, Brian Dozier. If they really, really wanted to, they could move Whit Merrifield to third and find a second baseman. They really don't have much of a difficulty finding potential options to replace Moustakas if he ends up priced out of their range, or if they're just not as interested in bringing him back. So, you know, I guess the Braves are as good as anybody, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean,
I just don't know.
Moose a little bit more than Hosmer, I think, is going to be more of a fit kind of necessity type of a scenario, where Hosmer can essentially, I mean, there's few players or few places that have, you know, a first baseman who is just locked in who Hosmer couldn't go. But I feel like, you know, Hosmer's going to have a lot of opportunities, because everyone, you know, first baseman, a lot of times it's a position that's easily upgradable, and especially in the American League, if you have a first baseman who's not very good defensively, you can plug Hosmer in there, and then that person can go right into being a DH. But with Moose, you know, third baseman is a very sought-after position, I think, but at the same time, you know, it's definitely – he's not good enough, I think, even despite the power surge this year. I don't know that he's good enough for teams to kind of, we'll make it work. We just need to sign this player. Like, I don't know if he's that kind of a player. So it's going to be, hey, we do have a need at third base. Let's get Mike Moustakas in here and solve that problem. If that's the Braves, then okay.
Okay.
Haven't really heard that much about it, but it's going to be something where I think the market will dictate to Moose a little bit more than he will be able to dictate to the market, whereas I don't know that that'll be the exact same with Hosmer. I think Hosmer can kind of dictate a little bit more where he goes. I mean, obviously every free agent is still going to need to have a fit. You know, if you have a good DH and a good first baseman, then Hosmer's not going to fit into your plans.
Yeah, but, he's definitely not playing right field.
No, certainly not. But, you know, there's a little – I think the scales are tipped a little bit more towards Hosmer in free agency than they are towards Moose, is what I'm trying to get at.
Teams will be more excited to go after him than Moustakas, I think. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely, especially when you factor in the off-the-field stuff and all that. So and by that I mean nothing bad about Moose off the field, but just that Hosmer is exceptionally good off the field, and there are teams that do value that, like the Royals. But anyway, and then we're coming in right behind Mike Moustakas on this list in the top 10. Lorenzo Cain comes in at number 7. So we'll kind of do the same format here. Lorenzo Cain, the prediction they have contract-wise is 4 years, $17 million. Or I'm sorry, 4 years, $70 million. 17 and a half is the annual average annual value, which is quite a bit higher than when we discussed free agency of what we kind of thought. Just kind of off the – we were both kind of thought – didn't necessarily think that he would sign for like a 345, but that a 345 type of deal, by that I mean 3 years, $45 million, is felt right. Is that am I remembering that correctly? That's what we kind of settled on.
We were talking 348, but
48. That's okay.
Same kind of difference. So I mean, it's a little bit off, but you know, it's the right team will find a way to go after a player. So I think
And at that point, you know, it's one extra year, so 3 to 4 years. I know. I think you can talk yourself into as a team, especially if that fourth year gets the deal done.
Yeah,
when you go beyond that 4 years and you start talking five, maybe even six, that's when Lorenzo Cain injury history, age,
right?
That's when it starts to get a little scary.
Yeah, that is pretty scary. And that's going to be the thing for him is the age is, you know, why his contract probably won't go past that 4 years unless there are some big options tied into it, because he's going to be 32 in April next year. And while, you know, he's a great athlete, there is a certain point where, you know, you have to consider that he's probably past his peak. And even if, you know, he's got a little bit of, you know, extra because – you know, he's just such an athletic player. It's still going to be one of those things where, you know, the timing of it does really matter. And, you know, so I think he's definitely going to be worth the type of contract, but it's not going to be a great long-term deal. So, you know, it's still going to be definitely worthy of a lot of teams going after him. Who do they have him going to on their prediction?
That's what I was going to get to. Do they have him going to the Giants? Which,
huh.
Yeah, another one of those where I haven't heard a ton of a ton of noise in the Giants' direction for this. Yeah. Some of the other ones they mentioned, Mariners, Blue Jays, Rangers, specifically Blue Jays and Rangers, I feel like I've heard.
Yeah, those are the two I've heard the most
as possible landing spots. Mariners seem like
Mariners seem like they're
an outfielder.
They're always in the market for everybody.
Yes,
Jerry DePoto cannot help himself. He's like me in fantasy football. It's like I've got six trade offers sitting out there just waiting, texting people in the middle of the day. Like they're trying to do work. I'm trying to get their quarterback or something. It's like
I'm trying to get Tom Brady. This team is what I'm trying to get.
Right. So. It's like, that's just kind of what it ends up in. And the Mariners are always tied to like every player in the offseason, it seems like.
Yes.
Rangers are the team that I've kind of heard the most, which makes sense. I mean, they'd have the money. They feel like they're going to be back on an upswing, and he'd be a good fit for them. So I think that would make a lot of sense. I think the Royals are ready to move on, even though I don't know who's going to play center field if that happens.
And I think how you mentioned with the Rangers, that's the kind of team that really makes the most sense for a player like Lorenzo Cain. If you're ready to kind of take that next step, he's a great player to just throw in and help you get there, because he will. But if you are like the Royals are going to be next year, where you're trying to retool, you're trying to rebuild, you're going to have a lot of young players in, you know, I mean, it's always good to have veterans around who can kind of show you how it's done for the young players. But at the same time, if you're paying a lot of money, you're just going to waste their talent. And they're, you know, not to say that next year is going to be a waste for the Royals, but that's what you're fighting against. You know, if you're specifically for a player like Lorenzo Cain, because of his age and because of his injury history and how you don't know 4 years, you don't know how many games that's going to entail. You know, mm-hmm. It's not as reliable as someone like Eric Hosmer in terms of games. So, but a team like the Rangers and their situation going into 2018, you know, that's a really great fit if they can make it work. So that'll be kind of interesting. Again, I said when we talked about it previously that I'm most interested in Lorenzo Cain and how he, just because of all those factors and how they go. If he was 2 years younger, you know, he'd be up there getting a Hosmer type of deal and getting that kind of a
Hosmer, Hayward kind of stuff. Yep.
And you know what they say here in the on the MLB Trade Rumors article is that he's basically the only plus defensive center fielder on the market who also has an above average bat. So, you know, that's pretty in demand. You know, he's shown the last 4 years that he can be consistent hitting the baseball. And that was the thing that people weren't sure about when he came up. So, you know, he's a premier player. If it wasn't for his age, you know, if he would have peaked and been a free agent 2 years sooner, just like I was saying, then man, look out. He'd be making a ton of money. He's still going to make some good money,
yes.
But because of some of those other factors, it's not going to be as much as maybe he would have made, but it'll be, that might be the toughest. Lorenzo Cain's such, he might be my all time favorite Royal, and he's been such a fun player to watch these past 5-6 years that might be the toughest to see him in a new uniform, especially if it's like, I don't know, Diamondbacks or something. Like there's no rumors about going, but like just a jersey that looks like completely different, you know, like if he was with the Rangers, you know, the color scheme is kind of similar. You know, I feel like, especially when they wear like their gray uniforms, you know, he would look relatively at home, you know, not at home, but you know what I mean?
Like
it
normal.
Wouldn't be as big of a shock. Yeah. Like but this, if he went to the Pirates or something, you know, be like, oh man, that don't look right.
It looks so differently weird. Yeah. It's kind of like when the World Baseball Classic was going on and like Duffy and Hosmer, even just in the Team USA uniforms. Like
yeah.
It just looks so different. It's so
the different font and the just, different styles. And yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be a weird part, is just kind of seeing those. Well, even if you look at like Lorenzo Cain in the old Brewers uniforms before he was traded to the Royals,
it just looks
strange. It's like, really? It just seems so weird because he's been a part of this team for so long. And, you know, all of them, it's just going to be strange. Escobar is going to be strange. And Vargas, even though he's been on so many other teams, you know, we've gotten used to him.
Yeah.
The last 4 years being around, and that's kind of the thing with all of these guys. But yeah, I mean, Kane's the, you know, just on the weirdness side, but he's gonna be the hardest to replace for the Royals because they don't really have a ready-made option. We talked about Cuthbert and, you know, Hunter Dozier is around, and Ryan O'Hearn or Frank Schwindel. Those guys could all fill in on the corners, on the infield, but the Royals, as far as center fielders, I mean, they just don't have a lot of depth there. And Paulo Orlando, Billy Burns, those are kind of the guys you've got right now who could play that position. And, you know, Orlando's not that reliable. Burns is just not that worthwhile on the roster. Bubba Starling is, you know, okay.
It's Bubba Starling.
It's, you know, that, when is that ever going to happen? Can you count on him starting out at center field at the beginning of the year? I really can't see that happening. So that's probably something where the Royals are going to have to go out and find somebody else. They're not going to find it internally. I think they'll be fine for especially like the big spots, first base, third base. They're going to be looking at internal candidates. Mm-hmm. They have guys they're comfortable with. Cuthbert is played well in 2016. He filled in admirably for Moustakas, had a good second half last season. Hunter Dozier had a lost season last year with a couple of different injuries, but he was good the year before. Ryan O'Hearn has been a notable name the last couple seasons. Frank Schwindel was the BP Kansas City Minor League Player of the Year. Had a great season in Omaha. I don't know if long-term he counts as much, but he definitely hit last year, so that's definitely something. So I think that's just kind of what you have to look at, is the Royals are going to be, if they're going out on the market, center field is going to be their main thing to find that they can't find somewhere else. You know, they've got some pitchers to fill in where Vargas and Moylan and everybody else is leaving, but it's just going to be tough, especially Kane, to replace that type of production and that defense.
They don't even have, like, a guy, you know? I mean, like, the closest might be Bubba Starling, but, you know, the Royals, like
Donnie DeWeese is pretty good, but I don't know if he's going to ever be really a center fielder, right?
Yeah, I mean, like what you talked about with pitchers, you know, that They don't necessarily have a bunch of aces coming through the system, but they've got guys. You know, you can plug them in.
Yeah.
They're going to be major league caliber for the most part.
You could deal with Scott Blewett, Josh Staumont, Glenn Sparkman, Eric Stout. You know, some of those guys could fill in. Jake Junis emerged last
Dick
year.
Dick Lovelady, perhaps. I mean, you've got
Dick Lovelady.
God, that's such a great. I hope he's good. I hope he's so good. God,
right.
So awesome.
Brian Flynn was activated. He's probably back. Sam Gaviglio pitched pretty well after being claimed last year. It's just they're guys. They can cover innings. They're probably not great. You know, it's going to take a lot to figure out a pitch at this level, but you've got guys who can fill in. You know, you have guys who could step in, and at least you can probably fake it one way or another. But yeah, center field, there's just not a good option to put out there. Orlando's probably it, and maybe he can handle it, but I don't know. I don't feel comfortable about it.
Yes, nor do I. But I mean, unfortunately, they don't have anybody. I guess, you know, if it's going to be Bubba Starling, then they got some problems. There's some problems the Royals have. Anyway, so that's kind of it for the major pieces of it. Some other interesting notes. We talk about this list of the top 50 here. Two other names in the top 10, right behind Lorenzo Cain at number 8 is Wade Davis, who they have going to the Astros for 4 years, $60 million. And then Greg Holland, as at number 10, who they have going to the Cardinals, 4 years, $50 million.
That would look weird.
So, yes, very much so. But just kind of interesting that from that 2015 World Championship team, there's 5 Royals from that team that are top 10 free agents this year. So, again, you know, even though Wade Davis and Holland weren't Royals this year, but it's kind of it's, again, one of those things where you kind of want that, but then you kind of don't, because it's like, why? You know, we're losing all these guys most likely, as the Royals are, because they're free agents. But at the same time, it's like, okay, you're doing something right if you've got players that are leaving your team or that have, you know, been on your team. And it's not like, you know, they traded away Wade Davis and they, you know, let Greg Holland go because of the injuries, and they thought weren't certain he could come back from, which he did. Good for him. So, you know, it's always kind of good to know, like, okay, they've done something right to have some guys that are in demand by other teams. So that's, and also I think a lot of it too comes from a place as a Royals fan for so many years where even the players that the Royals developed and that were good Royals, quote unquote, you know, weren't very sought after by other teams because the Royals were so bad. I don't know. It's just take it where you can get it, I suppose.
it's a small comfort, I suppose. Yeah, I don't know, but
all the same, it's getting closer and closer to that. So we've already had the emotion of the end of the season, the last home game, the home, or not homecoming, but the senior night, if you will, that they all had. So we've kind of dealt with that, and then it will be kind of piecemeal as we head through the rest of the season, as the rumors will start to heat up about who's going where, and then eventually they'll sign somewhere, likely not with the Royals, and then that'll be that. And we'll have to see the press conferences, and we'll have to see the pictures of them holding up a jersey of some other team, their name on it, and the number, and it's going to be bad and ugly, and that's how things go. But wish the best to all of them. We got that World Series, and
and then you get draft picks.
Yes.
Kind of what it comes to.
Speaking of which, there was some interesting Twitter conversations today. We can maybe save this, maybe put a pin in this for a later show this offseason.
We can tease it.
Yeah, but talking about how the Royals, whether or not they've actually done a good job of building an organization because they traded away so much in 2015 and the Cueto and Zobrist deals to win that World Series, but how it possibly sacrificed their ability to be competitive moving forward, and whether or not that was actually worth it both as an organization and to the fans. Kind of an interesting conversation. I know where I come out. I think I know where you come out, Mike. But we don't have to get into that now.
Yeah, we can think
about
that.
We've already had a full show, so we can kind of put a pin in that one and talk about it later on in the off season, especially as we try and fill in the pieces of what the Royals 40-man roster is going to look like as we get closer to spring training. So with that, I think we'll end the show there. So we'll be back next week, of course, as always, throughout the off season. We'll hot stove season. We'll start the league year will officially be over. Hot stove season will officially have begun. Things will start heating up. You'll start hearing more rumors. Starts to get a little fun. And
yeah,
we'll definitely have some things to talk about, especially as we head in. Each week we'll get closer to those winter meetings, and who knows what will occur. Until then, be sure to visit our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn, of course. Always a good time. If you're out in Westport, definitely stop by. Tell them the Kansas City Baseball Vault sent you, and they'll say, cool. and then have yourself a drink and have a good time. Which it's hard to not have a good time at Kelly's, but definitely have a good time. But be sure, as always, to be responsible. We would love for everyone who listens to this show to continue listening to this show as long as they're able. So be responsible when you go out to Kelly's. And then when you're not at Kelly's and you want that baseball fix and you've already listened to this week's Kansas City Baseball Vault, go ahead and head on over to bpkansascity.com. Just as we don't rest in the off season for the podcast, everyone over at the site does not rest in terms of writing. We're pumping out new content every day, covering different topics just like we are in the show. So especially, and it's always kind of nice to have the off season. You know, there's going to be some things that you kind of have to cover, 40-man decisions, things like that. But without having a direct team and results to talk about, it frees you up a little bit to talk about some other kind of topics that maybe you didn't have time to get into during the season and go a little bit more in depth. So we've definitely got a lot of those kind of in the chamber, if you will, that some of our very talented writing crew is going to get hammering away on as we go towards the off season. So definitely head over to bpkansascity.com and the main site, the mothership, if you will, Baseball Prospectus. Always good information just from a general baseball standpoint there. BP Kansas City, though, for your Royals.
Plenty of World Series alumni.
Yes, definitely.
So Kevin Goldstein and even like Colin Wires and Mike Fast, also part of the Astros.
Yeah.
So all BP alumni. It's kind of crazy to think about.
Another hearty congrats to them and the Houston Astros, 2017 World Champions. So yeah, be sure to visit our sponsors. Come back next week. We'll be back talking more Royals and more off-season baseball. It's sad to see it go, but has to happen. And all that means is that we're cruising towards a brand new season with new hope and new possibilities. Everyone starts a square one now. So stick with us. We'll guide you through this off-season. Back next week. Until then, thank you all for stopping by. See you next week. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
And that was Sinfonia in A Major by Sam Martini. It's noted that the third vicar of Dunshire would play that every night before delivering sermons. It's a fine piece of music. It's 10 past the hour here on Vault Public Radio. We wanted to remind you, dear listener, that this week is Pledge Week at the Vault. Your support is vital, and giving to Vault Public Radio is one way to help support your community. And speaking of community, you won't find a better friendly community than the staff at Kelly's Westport Inn. Like public radio, Kelly's is a staple of the community, a standard, an icon, a Kansas City tradition. Fine patrons like yourself have been supporting Kelly's Westport Inn since 1947, when, I'd note, that Randall Kelly poured his first pint. Contribute to Vault Public Radio today, you can get an official VPR tote bag. Or, you could stop by Kelly's for an affordable pint, the best pizza in town, and a few games of Papa Shot. We're grateful for your support at VPR and for your support at Kelly's Westport Inn. Enjoy the tradition. And now, 4 hours of Best of the Baroque Period, followed by the Amstein Theaters and the Horse You Rode In On, hosted by Joseph Guevara Amherst.